Hello, welcome to another Cheap Shot Wrestling podcast. I'm Matt Bass. I'm here with Ben Bowles.
Yo!
And this is episode number 22.
That was really good.
Wow. That was,
We've made it to 22, though.
22. I mean, I'm genuinely surprised we've got this far. I mean, it's been, a year and a half? Something.
Year
like
and a half.
Beginning of last year that we started.
Yep.
You know, a lot of things have happened since then. I think at the time, Goldberg was Universal Champion at the time.
Oh, beautiful. What a beautiful time to start a wrestling podcast.
Brock Lesnar became Universal Champion at WrestleMania 33. Oh, he's still Universal Champion. He hasn't overtaken CM Punk's record, like a lot of people have said, because he's Universal Champion not WWE Champion.
He set a new record for the Universal title and currently holds the record for the men's singles title record.
Well, it's in terms of active champions.
Yeah.
He's the longest reigning active champion, as in
technically
of the current champions.
Yeah. And technically he's active.
Technically speaking, if you do work one match every 6 months, you are technically classed as active.
And you know, you're present, yeah. I guess.
I love do you remember when people used to say you have to defend your title at least every 30 days?
Oh yeah, if you don't, you have to defend it once a month.
You know, this kind of random rule that WWE bring out when they feel like it, you know.
It's a rule that's like, it's like an unwritten rule, but then when it needs to be a rule, it's a completely written and followed rule.
Oh yeah, that's a rule that's happened. Oh yeah, Kurt Angle come out and say, you haven't defended in over 30 days, you need to defend at the next pay-per-view. So like, what the hell is that?
We can vacate your title. It's like, that's never happened
before.
That's
never happened ever. When has anyone said, well, no, I refuse to have a match, and they went, okay, well, we're going to take your title off you.
I really hope in those situations, Kurt Angle mentioned something in the ring, and then you just see people in the gorilla just flicking through rule books.
What?
Where's he seen that?
In the wrestling rule book that we rewrite every night.
Yeah, the encyclopedia. Boom, on the desk.
Anyway, we'll get to it. Episode number 22. We have a lot to cover. We've been...
this is
the thing. So last time we did a podcast, we talked about Backlash, and we were very disappointed because Backlash was bloody awful, right?
It was unnecessary.
It was just terrible. That it was so badly planned and all the rest of it, right? So we've kind of... Let's just kind of put an end to that. That was bad. We've actually had some really good content.
There has been...
So we had some really good stuff to show, to talk about.
Really solid. Obviously, NXT is...
NXT TakeOver Chicago.
It was just solid already.
It was brilliant. And Money in the Bank was actually pretty good as well.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I had obviously all the expectations for NXT TakeOver, as you always do, leading up to it. I had nothing, like no expectations for Money in the Bank. But I was pleasantly surprised.
The thing is if TakeOver was booked the way that main roster pay-per-views are booked, and it was given the same amount of time as a main roster show pay-per-view, then an NXT TakeOver show would be, 4 hours long. There would be the five matches we saw, but then there would be like four other matches from people we don't give a shit about.
Yeah.
And doing stuff we don't care about. And it would be overall, we think, it was average or a bit bad. But because they can focus on five things and go, right, we've got five matches, we've got 3 hours, we can give them enough time to fully do these matches and really show what they can do.
Yeah.
It was a very good show.
And it's like, to echo that a little bit more, the simplicity of it is the fact that they had five things to focus on and they're five solid stories.
Yeah.
There can be like a few blips here
there
and there.
There can be weaker stories than others.
Stronger ones, but they all made sense.
Yeah, there was all that kind of thing. You went into it and go, oh, I know who's doing what in that storyline.
Yeah.
I know why each person is doing that and has done that thing.
Yeah.
And you go into it thinking, I'm really invested in what's going on. So you have five matches, which, you know, we'll get onto this specifically with some of the matches, but... There are matches that maybe aren't as good as they could have been.
Yeah.
But because you're invested in storyline, you're like, on a technical wrestling aspect, they might not be the best wrestling match. I can appreciate the story.
Yeah, in the context.
Yeah.
It's like, in the context of the situation, I can appreciate that match had to happen and it was good. And you go, I can see the entertainment value in that. Yeah. But then there were others that really did outshine.
But it's like if Daniel Bryan had returned and he'd just gone... My first match is going to be against The Miz. Mm. And he just went straight up, did a match against The Miz. And it was a technically good match. People would have gone, great.
It'd be like, cool, but there was nothing really going to that. It was just straight away, blowing your load immediately.
They didn't. They went with Big Cass.
Yep.
Rest in peace.
he's not dead.
His career is. That's
his
all.
Oh, what a fall from grace.
We'll get on to him. But he, you know, did the big cast stuff.
Yep.
And then now he's moved on to he did some stuff with like the WWE Championship or kind of trying to get the he's in the Gauntlet match on SmackDown, and he got taken out by the Bludgeon Brothers of all people. I imagine it was meant to be Big Cass.
It was definitely meant
to be
Big Cass.
But he got fired about 6 hours earlier, so it was the Bludgeon Brothers.
They clearly had very much, they'd plucked him out of that story. Yeah. And gone, okay, who, the Bludgeon Brothers, they just put them in there for a second.
Although,
fine.
I'd argue it wouldn't have made sense to be Big Cass, even if Big Cass had been kept on, because he lost twice on pay-per-view in a row to Daniel Bryan, so why on earth would he be going anywhere near Daniel Bryan? I mean, he still can't beat the little man.
The story had died.
Anyway, so he does that stuff, and then builds to another story, does another story, and there's still people going, when's this Miz storyline going to happen? And then eventually, at WrestleMania, they have this match, and they build to WrestleMania. Like, Daniel Bryan gets eliminated by The Miz in the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
Miz eliminates him, he's gone. Miz ends up, I don't know, getting eliminated and ends up in a match for the WWE Championship before WrestleMania, wins the title, goes to WrestleMania, and Daniel Bryan's like, no, you stole my opportunity.
Yeah.
We're going there. Or doing something and just doing a big storyline so when it gets to WrestleMania, people give a shit.
It means something. That's like we've been echoing that for ages.
And that's the thing.
Ages.
Those two could have had a match first night of SmackDown that Daniel Bryan was back. But it would have been good, but it wouldn't have meant anything because most of the audience, let's say, would know that those two had a thing and been kind of back and forth during the Talking Smack stuff, but it was so long ago.
And it was on Talking Smack, but I think that's where that storyline
developed.
It's a bit
more niche because it's on Talking Smack.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you've got that, and then it's just, it's a backstory.
Mm.
And it's a kind of overrunning thing of when Miz was on SmackDown with Daniel Bryan as GM and this kind of stuff as well.
Yeah.
That whole thing. And they'd need to explain that, and they'd need to add something new to it to make it relevant. So, I think that's what the thing with NXT, they had these storylines that had investment. So even in a match like Shayna Baszler versus Nikki Cross, might not be a technically brilliant match, but those two had a good storyline going into it.
Yeah,
and so I actually cared about the outcome of the result. You
and
know?
They did have a very good match. It was good. Like, it was, I don't know. We've figured out before we started recording that I had misread the ending completely.
Yeah,
which now see it in my head and go, that makes a lot
of
sense.
You said it was weak.
I was like, it just made Nikki Cross look really weak.
Yeah.
I was like, that's kind of rubbish. Like, it was almost like she just sort of tapped out, or well, passed out to what was basically a sleeper hold.
Whereas actually, it was kind of like during the match, there were these bits where Nikki was trying to do like sort of mind games with Shayna, where she was going, like, come on, Shayna. Punch me.
That's my
terrible Scottish accent. Punch me, Shayna. Go on, punch me, Shayna.
It's hard for someone who's Scottish to sound scary.
Yeah.
They sound so lovely.
Well, no, they're angry. But yeah, so she's just like wanting her to like punch her and do this kind of, and she kind of like revels in the pain. And there's moments in the match where even though she just had some really horrible move to her, like Nikki just is sat there like with that kind of Mankind smile on her face. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's very
when Mankind had the tooth in his nose and I think it was JR okay going, he's actually smiling, that's sadistic.
And he was actually just trying to stick his tongue through the hole.
Yeah,
but it
looked like he was smiling.
Yeah,
but it's that thing, it's like kind of like she's getting beaten up, and even in her dazed like I'm being beaten up thing, she's actually smiling. She's enjoying it,
she's loving it.
And so at the end she gets put in the lock and Nikki just starts smiling, and she's like, she almost I think she sort of holds her arms out a bit, and she's just like accepting the loss, like she knows she's like, this is gonna be the best because I'm gonna get choked out. And you see her with a smile on her face, and as she's fading, the smile fades, and then she's gone. And it was just perfectly done. I think
that's the thing. I think the way I watched it at my desk and kind of looked up and down every now and then.
You weren't paying attention.
I think I may have missed that bit and just saw her basically asleep in her arms.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh,
you missed
okay.
the bit where she was smiling beforehand.
That's it. And I obviously didn't have the sense to go back because I wouldn't have noticed anything like that before or thought anything like that would have happened. But yeah, now when you've explained it, I thought, that actually does sound really cool. She Sister Abigail'd it a little bit.
She did.
Yeah.
Well, she is what Sister Abigail would have been. I think she is what people assumed would come in for the Wyatt family, which they never needed to. And I was never really on board with the idea of a Sister Abigail, really.
I was at first, and then it faded quickly.
It could have happened, but they missed the boat on it so early on that there was no point doing it later on.
He then just stopped mentioning it.
Yeah. anyway, so... That was a brilliant match, I think. And I think it was right that Shayna won the title just because she hasn't had the title that long and she needs to be seen as this undefeatable, manic person that eventually someone will finally overcome Shayna Baszler. That's what they need.
She's got the women's division in NXT has really benefited from having like a dominant champion, like Asuka and things like that. And also because they've brought in the new belts and things like that, Asuka made that belt really prestigious.
Yeah, she did, yeah.
So it's, I now associate that, visually, that belt with someone who's going to hold that title for a long time.
Yeah.
So I think it's good that they carry that on.
Aleister Black versus Lars Sullivan. That was, I think, the weakest match in the card, but not because it was bad. It was just not as good as the others.
And
that's the way of saying it.
It had very little... very little build up that I cared about.
Yeah,
it was a lot of just okay. They need to.
He's a big guy. He's slightly smaller guy.
David versus Goliath. Let's defend the title at NXT. Yeah. We want. They obviously have to have the title match there.
And,
it's good that
they did. And Aleister Black needed to win that match.
Yeah, but we I just knew looking at the card that that match is not going to be the main event. It's a shame. I like seeing the title should always be the main event, but it wasn't.
Mm.
But I totally get why just looking at the card because that was like. In that match, Aleister Black was doing he's kicking Lars and going, oh, my leg. And it's just very typical, just sort of like big guy, little guy.
He goes to kick Lars and Lars grabs the leg and then pushes him to the ground, that kind of stuff. It's like, okay, cool. I've seen that before, but, you know, whatever.
It's Aleister Black fighting against the odds. Like, how is he going to do it? And then he does.
so we got those two matches out. Let's talk about the three matches that were the real standing points. The first one we'll talk about is actually the Tag Team Championship match because it was on paper.
Like that was going to be like the Aleister Black last.
That was like Aleister Black last. I was going to be like, oh God, Orny Lorcan and Danny Burch. I mean, it's like, but I think they knew that. It was almost like they went into that match going, no one is expecting anything from this. So let's just put out, we could go at 100 mile an hour.
Mm.
And put on the best match we've ever had. And they did.
They
knocked it out of the park. And I was genuinely in that match going, come on, Danny Burch, you could do this.
Because after I watched it, I text you and just said, I can't believe that I'm now sitting here watching an NXT TakeOver event and going, the best match so far had only Lorcan in it. Yeah. And it was, and you went, I agree.
I know.
It was really crazy.
I mean, it was a brilliant match.
I thought it was just me. I thought maybe I missed something.
They were going at it. And I think the crowd at first were clearly on Undisputed Era side, right? Because it's
Adam
Undisputed
Cole.
Era and it was a Chicago smarky crowd and they were, of course, going to be on the Adam Cole baby and all that stuff, right? And then they see Danny Burch and Orny Lorcan, who actually got booed a little bit when they first came out because people were just like, oh, God, this, right? This is going to be a not very good match. These two are average. They're okay, but I don't care about this match. And they were doing that match. And I think the crowd... realized, oh, we were wrong, actually. No, because this match is actually really awesome.
They really benefited.
And they really got behind them. And it was like, by the end of that match, the crowd were behind Danny Burch and Orny Lorcan. Like, I think they'd actually kind of gone from, okay, we know you're the good guys, but we don't really like you, so we're going to boo the bad guys, to, actually, the good guy's pretty good. We will actually chant for you.
Turns out Danny Burch, even in his older age, and Orny Lorcan, they are one hell of a team.
Yeah,
they pulled that off, and that was I think credit goes to both teams though, where obviously you're only as good as your opponent.
It's true, and Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong were very good.
They
as
were
well.
Fantastic in that match. So it was just, it was really good to see, and it was again, it's one of those things every time there's an NXT takeover, we both tune in and go, I know it's going to be good, but how good?
Yeah,
and then that match, obviously, you picture it being weak. I then, after that match finished, went, this is going to be a fucking good pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I was like, I did not expect anything from that match, and it gave me the best.
Yeah.
So that was obviously, it might have even been my favourite match on the card.
It was, I think it was my favourite because I went into it with low expectations.
Yes.
And like, the
difference in my opinion to what actually happened.
Yeah. Whereas this next match we're going to talk about was a match that I was looking at and going, that's going to be the show stealer.
Yes.
And... it was good, and it was very good, but I think they can do even better.
To a lot of people's standards, I think it was the show stealer.
Right, this is Ricochet Velveteen Dream, just to make it clear. Right, so Ricochet and Velveteen Dream, like the two of them are just so good. They're so damn good. And Velveteen Dream is like 22 years old. So that kid's got like 15 years still left in him.
And he's
already, think about what he can do.
That's it. And he's now, he's competing at the top card. Like, basically, like, he's competing at the top of NXT.
Yeah, I do worry about him, though. Only because, not for him, but because he has struggling mid-card, we've got nothing for you written all over
him. He's got
him.
Tyler Breeze written all
over him. He's got Tyler Breeze written all over him. And it's that thing where you go, oof. Although, granted, Velveteen Dream is much more popular than Tyler Breeze ever was in NXT.
I'd agree with you there.
Because Tyler Breeze was a heel, and it was like...
He was only popular because of his heelness.
Like, yeah, but he was a good technical wrestler, but yeah. His character was a bit lame, bit dated almost, because he was doing selfie stuff, and it's like, okay, WWE late to the party on selfies, brilliant, okay.
And it had the selfie stick thing, and people were like, do the WWE know that selfie sticks aren't cool?
Yeah, I don't know what they're trying to do there, but anyway. Yeah. So that was a thing, and I think that Velveteen's just good. There's just nothing else to say. He's just him. He's a technically very good. Yeah, he's still got a lot to learn. Everyone's got a lot to learn.
Of course he does. And there's a lot of things that
athletically.
Yes. Yeah. And it's little things that they did in the build up to this match that got me excited. It's Ricochet being the sort of almost like. He's like a veteran in these sort of situations.
That jump.
It's long. Oh, that flip over the top rope. Fuck me. How can he do that?
It's just like GIF material. That's what it is.
It was. The thing is, that's exactly the moment I'm sort of like hinting at as well, is the bit when he did on NXT, flipped over the top rope and landed on his feet. But it's the composure.
And then calmly walks up to him.
It's the composure of landing on his feet, not stumbling. Like Olympic level gymnasts. Crave that sort of landing.
Yeah, yeah. And on, I was like, on a metal floor.
Yeah, on a thin mat and a metal floor, just goom, and he just casually walks up, and I was like, he couldn't have done that better.
Although I do wonder if in his head he's going, shit, my leg is bloody killing me.
Immediate shin spins, and he's like, oh yeah.
Can you imagine if he screwed that up and he just tore his shin, like tore his knee completely, and just went flip, land. Ground.
No, honestly,
and then Velveteen just stood there like, what do I do in this situation?
Do I pick him up?
Do I just go over there and start kicking him, or do I just walk away?
It's weird that you say that, because the first time I saw it, the first thing that came to my head was Sid Vicious leg break.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, and that was on the top rope almost. And this was ring to the ground.
It's a bit like what I think of when Seth Rollins broke his, injured his knee.
Yeah.
And he was doing that. He was doing the powerbomb thing on Kane or something, and his knee just went.
Oh, and it went inwards.
Yeah. And that's what I thought could happen. Anyway, Ricochet and Velveteen Dream.
Mm. But if we want to
put on a very good match,
yes.
And their promo stuff in the process was very good.
That's it. If we're talking about context and story here.
Context, yeah.
Great. It was good build up. I believed that they were going to be at each other at that point.
I'm genuinely like, I can't, whenever I see NXT, you know, when I watch NXT every week, and I see at the top of the show, they go, at the beginning of the top of the show, and they say, oh, later on tonight, Ricochet is going up against whoever. I'm like, yes.
I'm going to watch it.
I'm so happy
about
it.
It's going to be a good main event.
I cannot wait for Ricochet's matches, because they're just exciting. And maybe that'll wear off after a while when he's been around for a long time. And maybe I'll just kind of go, okay, yeah, we get it now. You do flippy shit. Right, okay, cool.
But he does flippy shit well.
Yeah.
I think this is what keeps the longevity of his sort of fascination up. Because I, like you said, I do the exact same thing. I see him at the top of the card and go, I'll wait for that.
Can't wait for that.
Can't wait for that.
And
it's going to be good.
With TakeOver, him against Velveteen Dream was like, oh, God, this is going to be incredible. Because it's just a mixture of great storytelling and then getting into the match and doing some incredibly good stuff.
Yeah. They're both technically sound.
Velveteen Dream managed to get an elbow drop over.
Yeah. And the thing is, Anna's a legit finisher.
Yeah.
Like, I see him drop it and go, fucking, that's the end of the match. It harkens back to his bloody top of the ladder elbow drop to Lars Sullivan.
Yeah.
And you go, that's it, I'm sold on that move.
Well, it wasn't just the top of the ladder one, it was when it was preceded by five other elbow drops from each of the
corners
as well. He kind of did an elbow drop one corner, went to another corner, did another elbow drop, got to another corner, did another elbow drop, then got up the ladder and did the one off the top ladder. And it was like, this guy's incredible.
I bet you there are wrestlers who do these really complicated finishes and they go, I wish I'd thought of that.
Yeah.
I could have just done an elbow drop and just made it look great.
Yeah.
That's the simpler you do it, the better you can make it look.
Yeah.
And he makes it look fantastic. Yeah. So, and
he gets like curvature in it, if that makes sense. Well, he really racks up his elbow and just really goes right in.
He emphasizes the drop as well. So it's not just like
He's almost like parallel with him. His legs are almost parallel with his arm. Because it's kind of like, as he goes down, he's on his side almost as he's doing it.
It's like Kyrie Sane. Yeah. Kyrie Sane throws
her whole body into the elbow drop. And it's like, that's why those two have an elbow drop and they've got it over.
Yeah, they've made it unique to them.
Yeah.
So you can tell when I see him do the elbow, I'm like, okay, he's going to finish this now. But that was great. I think it was just, the build-up was fantastic. It's a match we all wanted to see.
Yeah.
And we finally got to see it. Yeah. And it was good.
And, yeah. I want to see them wrestle again.
They should keep a series up.
I think they could do another match.
Do a best of three.
Yeah.
Like, just keep doing matches.
Talking of best of threes. The Chicago Street Fight, the main event. Tommaso Ciampa versus Johnny Gargano, which I was thinking going into it, I think this is going to be number two of three. Because I think they wouldn't end it at an NXT takeover in Chicago that is around Money in the Bank. They would end it around SummerSlam or end it around WrestleMania time.
See, the thing is, I thought that, and now, this could be a ploy, but after the event, Ciampa did tweet to say that he's basically going after Aleister Black now.
Well, yeah, but...
Which is the thing, but that's
he won. He that's just, why, because that's thing, he yeah. won against Gargano, but that's not going to stop Gargano from going...
Well, no, I deserve
well,
it.
Well, no, because I had that match won. I made you tap out, but there was no referee around.
There you go.
And so there's still unfinished business there.
Make that match a fucking triple threat and I'll watch it.
I think what will end up happening is there'll be some big thing where they'll make it like a best two out of three falls or Hell in a Cell or something.
They'll up something the ante. Big.
They have to up the ante now.
That's fair, actually. I can see that happening.
And I think they'll do something like that between the two of them. And or they'll do a thing where it's like there'll be a contract at the top of a ladder. And the winner keeps their job on NXT.
Which, yeah, they could do again.
And the loser goes to the main roster.
Loser goes to Raw. Oh, no.
Loser goes to Raw match.
Can I at least go to SmackDown? No, sorry, you're going to have to go to Raw.
The loser goes to Raw match. That pretty much sums up how people feel about NXT. They go, yeah, if you leave, yeah, you've lost.
Do you remember it used to be a really...
He's been bumped up.
Yeah, it used to be an exciting thing on NXT when someone got, like... when they would graduate to the main roster.
Yeah.
Now it's become like a sad event.
Where it has been, because like, especially if they've been at the top of NXT, you know, you go, yeah, these guys are like top of NXT, the NXT champion, they're challenging and doing these incredible matches with these new belts and new kind of championships and this new thing, and it's all really cool.
And it's Triple H, so it's very like, yeah, it's very open to the rest of the wrestling world.
There's no Vince on it. Yeah. You know, Vince's paws aren't anywhere near it. And then they go to the main roster and they end up like No Way Jose.
Oh, poor
guy.
Know,
or Tyler Breeze.
Tyler Breeze suffered and then bounced back, but didn't bounce all the way back up.
Yeah.
He sort of bounced and found his special place. He found a good place to be.
Yeah.
Which is beloved by the fans.
Or as all the authors of pain.
Ooh, apparently
I read about this. Apparently one's got a visa issue. This
yeah, that's why they've been held off TV.
But I was, at one point, I did like a couple of weeks ago, I go, what the hell has happened to the Authors of Pain?
That was
They kicked out Paul Ellering, and then they were just gone.
And that seemed like a big shift for them, where they kicked out Paul Ellering.
We thought, this is going to be them going
like, as a team going solo.
Yeah.
But no, didn't really do it.
They happened there. But anyways, back to the Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano. Could have went off on a tangent there. But those two, they put on a very good match.
I think there were
some silly bits in it, but I thought that like...
I just wish it wasn't a... Sorry, you carry on.
No, I was going to say that like, I thought they were good. There was a couple of moments where I thought, oh, this is the end. And then it wasn't. It was sort of like the dusty finish kind of thing. And I was like, okay, Ciampa's being put on a stretcher.
Oh, there were so many false finishes.
And then, he's everyone cheers because Gargano gets up off his Ciampa perch up there, you know, replicating what Ciampa did to him when he was being put on a stretcher.
Mm.
And like, okay, cool. He gets off that. He's beating up. He's throwing him back in the ring. And the ring had been torn up.
Yeah, they tore the corner off.
I thought it was cool, but I thought they should have made better use of that.
Yeah, I know. It did seem like it was sort of just done for that one spot at the end.
Yeah, and it was a bit of a weird spot at the end.
What were they trying to sell to me there? That Gargano was having a seizure? Is that what they were trying to sell
to
me?
I don't know. It's like...
it was kind of weird.
It was the use of all the people in suits. So it's like, oh, are we saying the match is over then?
Yeah, it was like...
So if you brought out all these men in suits who are like trying to separate them off and say, no,
call them like
we're
agents.
We're trying to get, Ciampa onto the stretcher to take him to hospital. Like, so what you're saying is this is a no contest. This match is over.
So no, we're just trying to put him on the stretcher.
But then Ciampa gets him into the lock or whatever, pins him or something, and it's like, oh, and that's okay. Okay.
It's like, but they had so many opportunities to end the match. I think I just have a lot of issues nowadays. I used to like them, but like sort of quite trashy matches where there's a lot of accessories and things are flying around the ring, and they're like, I had issue, and it's such a petty thing to have an issue with. Why were they wearing jeans?
I know, but that's a kind of standard street fight thing now,
isn't it? And they did the knee pads over the jeans.
Jericho and Ambrose did the same thing. Oh. Like, they had the same thing where they were like wearing jeans and it just looks stupid. Yeah, and we have knee pads over their jeans.
Oh, like, okay, I hate that. Fine. I just hate that. And I was like, well, what's different to you wearing your pants?
I know, yes.
But it was great. It was a spectacle, that match. It was long.
It was long.
It was a long match. And it was
35 minutes long.
It was long, and I didn't get bored.
But part of that was, like, probably about a good 5 minutes of that was them with Ciampa having gone through the tables, being put on the stretcher, and all that kind of stuff. That was, like, a good 5 minutes in the match.
It was, yeah. No, that went on for a while.
But I thought it was definitely a good match. It wasn't as good as their first match.
Oh, their first match was it was a 5-star match. It was great.
Yeah.
And this was just a bit too chaotic for me. I know that's where the story was going, that it was going to be this all-out war.
Yeah.
And they were at each other's throats to a point where it was like fight to the death almost. And I get that, but I always have an issue with matches like that where it's just a bit trashy. I don't. There's also little things like I don't like the ring being destroyed. I think that looks dumb.
Yeah, I think you can do whatever you like outside of the ring, but I think at the very least... the ring itself should be kept, because you're breaking the illusion a bit, because they're tearing up the ring and you see this sort of sponge pad between the ring mat and the wood floor.
Because that spot tells me that when they usually take it, obviously just, this is obviously, we know it's padded and we know it still hurts a hell of a lot.
It's breaking the illusion.
It breaks that sort of, it suspends my disbelief.
Yeah.
That when I see someone take a DDT, I go, that looks like it hurt. But now what that spot tells me is, okay, that doesn't hurt. What actually hurts is when you expose the board.
Yeah.
And then it hurts. And I'm like, okay. I get it. I totally get it in the context of the match, but they should have looked at the bigger picture there and thought, it just looked a bit trashy at the end when he's like, and then Gargano is having like a little fit.
But it also makes you think that if the two of them have a match again, the match can't end without them tearing up the ring again.
Yeah, they've got to go one further.
But I suppose if in the third match, which would be Gargano winning to make the best 2 out of 3, Gargano beat Ciampa with his finishing move, his submission move.
Mm.
Made him tap.
Yeah.
And that wasn't to do with him being slammed on the wood or anything. So I suppose in that sense, we know that Ciampa can lose and he can be tapped out. Well, he did. He got tapped out in the first match as well. But can be tapped out in a normal situation. So I think that's probably what's going to happen in the third match, which I think will happen around SummerSlam.
Their first match was definitely my favourite. No, I mean this street fight was what it was, but that first match, it was technical mastery.
Yeah,
it was telling me a story. It was great wrestling. It wasn't trashy. There wasn't crap everywhere.
Mm. And there was some hardcore-y kind of moments, you know. When
it's the guy with the
crutch and all the rest of it, and the stupid crutch thing where he took the crutch and then the security guard just went, "Okay, cripple man, now we're going to take you away.
We're going to take this little sad man away now." It's like, hang on,
he just took my crutches. No, come on, you've got too near to the front.
You're being escorted away now, sir.
Yes.
And then there was
Hop.
I'm pretty sure the exact same guy holding a sign that was a stop sign.
Yeah.
That was disguised as a Gargano, please use my sign. And I thought you couldn't be more of a plant if you tried.
But I think it was okay. I'd say it was a 3.5-star, 4-star. Four star. Yeah, I came for the story, right? Yeah. For the context and for the fact that, like, if that match was on its own, just like that, with no context,
we shouldn't have stars. We should have our own thing.
Oh, I don't know.
I'd give it 4 bananas out of 5.
Bananas. It could go with like shots.
Four kumquats out of five.
Well, a cheap shot wrestling podcast. We do shots.
Four shots out of five. All right, I can get behind that. Four shots.
That's a four-shot match.
That was a four-shot match.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I like that. That sounds good, actually.
We like to drink with Ben. We're going to have to bring out whiskey next
time. Yeah, we're going to have to do four shots.
For every match we rate, we go, it's a one-shot match because I can't take anymore.
It's a half-shot match. Definitely a half-shot match. That is a four-shot of Pepsi match.
Yes. I think it was kind of like three and a half, four, because it's like, I think... Given the context, we'll say four, just because
told
the context and the story well and all the rest of it. And there was the references to the previous story, like with like Ciampa being put on the stretcher with Gargano sat on the front top looking weird down onto him. Mm. And it's like the role reversal and all that kind of stuff. I thought it was really well done. But
good nods. And
the match itself was a bit trashy.
Because it's not technical. That's it's me being super picky, because obviously it was great, but it's just I don't like trashy matches. I don't like the ring being destroyed. I don't like... Like exposing little things like that, and then just them fighting in the crowd is always wrestlers fighting in crowds nowadays is so risky.
Yeah,
it's just it really makes me. I'm just like, can you get back in the ring? Can you get back in the ring, please? But it had like really good moments.
So overall, Takeover, very good show.
Really
and
I
kind of came out thinking, yeah, top that.
Yeah,
because that was what it's kind of like what they had the next night. Had to be better than that.
Well, I think you'd messaged me just to, in contact, in reference to this as well, like the whole show in general. You'd messaged me actually saying like they just get better and better every year.
I don't understand how Takeover does it. Surely they're going to reach a sort of terminal velocity at some point, and we're going to have to go. They cannot get any better than this.
There will be. There's always like there have been really good ones. There have been ones that have been slightly lower though. When it's usually when the roster's been raided.
Yes, basically.
Yeah. And there's weak stories.
Well, that's
and there's
the
not
thing.
Much going
like
on.
So, you had. The build-up of NXT, and you had some really good talents, and then you kind of get to a point where around the time when Bayley and Sasha were feuding over the NXT Women's Championship, like that sort of period, there were a lot of really good people.
Yeah.
And NXT was so hot at that point. You're like, this is good. But then they all got raided and sent to the main roster, so you end up with NXT struggling a bit, and they were kind of at a loose end, and Asuka came along, and then from there... it's built up again, and now they've kind of built up again, so they've got to a point where they've got a really lot of really good people in there, but in a year's time they're going to be struggling again.
Well, that's because it.
Like, Adam Cole,
Adam
you know,
Cole, Ricochet,
Velveteen
Dream.
You could Aleister even say Black, even
you could even see people like Cassius Ohno, like reliable people that are in that locker room, and you go, they're going to go.
But like Gargano and Ciampa,
Shayna
Baszler.
Oh, that's a big one.
They'll all be gone.
Nikki Cross as well, like Sanity.
Nikki Cross, Kairi Sane could be gone as well.
Yeah.
I just think there's a bunch of people who could all go up to main roster within a year.
That's the problem with these events getting better and better, is they get more and more attention.
Yeah.
And then these wrestlers do eventually get called up. But I know there's going to be better ones. There's going to be the next Takeover is going to be better than this one, because I thought they'd peaked at
next Takeover will be at SummerSlam, won't it?
Yeah,
and that'll be where is SummerSlam this year? Is it New York or is it
I can't remember.
But
it's definitely going to be at SummerSlam. I know it's going to be better than this one because I thought they'd peaked at NXT London. I thought Takeover London was like their best show.
Takeover London was a very good show.
It's a very good show.
The next one is NXT Takeover Brooklyn.
Oh, it's Brooklyn 4?
Yeah, Brooklyn 4, yeah.
That'd be 4. Are we on 3 or 4?
No, it's 4.
It is 4.
I think,
Oh, yeah, because 3 was the... Wait. Yeah, 4.
Yes.
God, they've been in Brooklyn a lot. When are we going to see London 2?
Yeah, it's been, what, 2.5 years?
Yeah, we've done Brooklyn enough. Let's get London on.
Yeah, the first Brooklyn was in August 2015. Second one was August 2016. And then third one was in August 2017. And then Brooklyn 4.
Brooklyn 4 is going to be
August 2018.
They're going to... What other references are they going to have to Brooklyn? They've done them all. So they're going to, like... The last one, like, Brooklyn 2 had the gold chain as the logo.
Yeah.
Which people hated, but I liked
I thought it was terrible,
I liked it. But it's like, and then 3 had loads of references to Brooklyn. What are they going to do in 4? They should just not have any references.
3 was done like the Brooklyn Bridge. I'm just looking at the logo now. It's kind of like solid stone kind of 3.
That wasn't even that long ago. That doesn't feel like it was that long ago anyway.
But this thing, right, so you take that show, I'm talking about like people moving up and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
On that show, there are people in there that you go, oh, they're still around now in NXT. And then some people you go, So you had Andrade Cien Almas... against Johnny Gargano, which is a storyline I feel like didn't end that long ago.
No, and it ended in the best match.
Because it was prior to Mania. There was like the stuff before the Mania takeover.
Mm-hmm.
There was in the run up to that, in that storyline to build up to the match between Gargano and Ciampa.
Yeah.
You had Gargano obviously lose his, you know, he got fired or whatever. He lost that match and got fired from NXT or something.
Oh, Gargano.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he was fired.
Thanks
from
to
NXT.
Ciampa.
Yes.
And that was him against Almas, wasn't it?
I think
it was
so.
Gargano versus Almas. And then Ciampa interfered and helped Almas win.
And then, yeah, and then Gargano.
Oh, that was it.
Because
it was like, what's her name? Gargano's wife Selena. Took out Zelina Vega.
I can't remember her name. But yeah, Gargano's actual wife.
Yeah, so she took out Candice LeRae.
Candice LeRae introduced her into the roster.
Yeah, so she climbed out from the crowd. As Mrs. Gargano climbing out of the crowd and took out Zelina Vega because Zelina Vega was in getting involved all the time, and then because of that, it was just left Gargano and Almas, and that was an incredible match.
That was a great match. That was the first.
At which point they then had this match. You thought, Almas is going to win. So Almas is going to lose.
Yeah.
And then Ciampa came back and screwed over Gargano after his injury.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, no, he screwed him. Gargano's lost, and then that build up to WrestleMania. So,
am I being stupid here? Where is Almas?
He's on SmackDown.
He is on SmackDown. Okay,
but
yeah.
He hasn't really had his opportunity yet, which I think is a bit worrying.
That's what I thought. Am I being stupid? I haven't seen him in
it. No, him and Almas and Vega had like a couple of months where it was just video packages saying he's coming soon.
Oh, the typical like vignettes in 3 weeks.
Yeah, we're kind of putting him off for a bit so that we can give ourselves time to come up with something good or find a spot for him on the card so that we don't introduce him too early.
Yeah.
Which I'm fine
or, like,
with.
Exaggerate his entrance or something like that. Or they'll be working on something for him, but it's quite sad. I'm hoping he does end up with something good.
Yeah. So at TakeOver Brooklyn you had Almas versus Gargano, Sanity versus the Authors of Pain.
Oh yeah.
Aleister Black versus Hideo Itami from 205 Live.
Poor Hideo. Actually, I shouldn't say poor Hideo. He's actually doing quite well on 205
Asuka,
Live now.
Yeah, Asuka versus Ember Moon. And, you know, both main... Well, I say Asuka's a mainstay already on the main roster. Ember Moon is finding her feet a bit, but I think she's doing okay to start with.
Asuka
and then,
went in at the same level she was at NXT.
And then you had Drew McIntyre versus Bobby Roode for the NXT Championship. Well, that was when McIntyre won the title.
Funniest thing was actually
those two that show, but generally I was going to say is that you get people who've moved from that to the main roster, some of them successfully, like Drew McIntyre's doing all right.
Well, like I said, Asuka
has done
straight away at the level she was at.
Yeah, Asuka's done incredible. But then there's the Authors of Pain, who I think might suffer from them being gone, because at least with Andrade Cien Almas is that Almas, they just went, he's not coming yet. Sanity, they kind of teased Sanity. They're not coming yet. Oh, but now they have now because they're ready to do it. Sanity was on SmackDown and were pretty cool. So it was like, okay, they're now here. They've made their entrance and they are made their debut. Authors of Pain made their debut. They were on TV. They had matches. They kicked out
got rid of Ellering and then disappeared.
And were gone. And we're like, oh, okay, if we just forgotten about them now.
And it's not their fault. It is obviously that visa issue. I can't remember which one it is.
They might struggle. One of them's from the Netherlands.
You know that obviously, if they're not in the forefront of Vince's mind, he's not going to bother.
No, exactly. He's going to forget about them.
Yeah.
Which I think is a shame in some respects, but I was never massively hyped on Authors of Pain. I know some people were.
They were,
I know,
right.
A lot
of
people were kind of really into them, but I've never been super into just big guy tag teams.
It goes back to what I said earlier about they're only like, you're only as good as your opponent. I feel like they had great matches because their opponents were top notch.
Yes.
So they need to find a team on the main roster they can really go out with.
So let's move on to the main roster, because we've talked about NXT a lot, and then to be fair, it was a great show.
It was worth a lot to talk about.
We'll just kind of sum up some of the matches that were less important or less good and kind of go with, and then we'll talk a bit more about some of the more interesting ones. So,
I was going to say that, yeah.
Obviously, at the pre-show, we saw tag team titles. Bludgeon Brothers defended the titles against Gallows and Anderson. we could do a whole podcast about why we think the Gallus and Anderson are being underused and what they could be better, how they could be better used. But
they're not even enhancement talent anymore.
No, they're just doing stuff, and I don't really know what they're doing or why they're doing anything. And I just
nothing's
why
clear.
Did they move them away from Balor? It just made no sense. They had something good there. Oh, it seemed like it happened to them before as well, because they were with AJ and they were doing really well, and then AJ got moved to SmackDown and they were kept on Raw, and it was like, oh, okay, so they're not together anymore. And then they just, I don't know.
Well, they teased that thing with Finn, and then it was like, oh shit, they're going to bring back, like, they're going to have Finn be the leader. That'd be
the
sweet.
Balor Club.
Have
yeah.
proper Balor Club. And they did Balor Club.
Too sweet.
For about a couple of weeks.
And they did it for, you know, like a couple of months.
Probably a month.
Month or so.
And then they went to SmackDown as well.
Yeah, now they're on. No, they're. Yeah, sorry, they're on SmackDown.
Yeah, they're on SmackDown. So it was
which
like,
is why it's why I find odd is that they're on SmackDown now. They could go back with AJ. Why have they not gone back with AJ?
It just seems like they're jumping around, and then
I don't get it.
That definitely feels like they're, because they've been on, they've had two different leaders, and they've been on both shows. It now feels like people are going, or the writers are just giving up.
Mm.
It does feel like, okay, we can't really do anything with it. Can you guys do anything with them? It's like, all right, we'll take them. And then SmackDown have taken them and gone, oh, what the hell did they do with them on Raw? They had them lose all the time. All right.
But yes, anyway, I mean, it was a fairly uneventful match.
Really uneventful,
But hopefully Gallus and Anderson can do something interesting going forward.
I'd like them to do something fun.
I thought they were going to do something with them in giving them this tag team title match, because they won that opportunity to get that. And I thought, okay, cool, they're doing something with Gallus and Anderson. And it was just like, oh, okay, no.
that opportunity's gone. All right.
So they started with Daniel Bryan versus Big Cass. Unexpected. Not unexpected that Daniel Bryan would win.
Why would they ever have him lose to Big Cass?
Big
on
Cass
a pay-per-view?
Lost. And now Big Cass, I think, has been fired because he wasn't future endeavored. Like, they didn't wish him. They didn't wish him well with his future endeavors.
He was
He's asked for his. It was just, we've negotiated the release of his of William, whatever his name is. And he was just gone. It was just like a one sentence thing. He's gone.
There was a really funny thing there where, like,
and it was very abrupt, and at a point where you think that's strange why they do that, why they give him a pay-per-view match
and then
release him the next day.
If they'd already planned to release him, why would they do it? And you go, it must have been a sudden choice. Apparently, there's loads of different stories
there's theories that people have.
It's like one of the most talked about releases in recent memory, where he's been released and all these stories have come out about how, like, his attitude on the road. Right. There was apparently an incident where he was on one of the WWE tour buses, and the door was jammed on the toilet.
Right.
He was in the toilet and suffers from claustrophobia, being quite a big guy in a small space. He then kicked the door down because he thought he was being ribbed. He thought the boys had locked him in.
Yeah.
Turns out it wasn't the case. It's just the door had got stuck. So he kicked the door down, and then apparently loads of the guys on the bus were a bit upset because they were like, oh, now we've got to use the toilet with no door. And now it's really embarrassing. So that went on, and then apparently, as they say, like, it's all speculation.
So it's like, one of the rumors was that he got fired because of when he went off script and beat the shit out of a midget.
That apparently was part of it. Yeah.
But the thing is with that is that I think that's probably an element of a sort of pattern of behavior. If that makes sense, they wouldn't. Because
if they fired
him for that, then they'd have fired him at the time. They didn't. They let it carry on, and he had pay-per-view matches.
They probably gave him a slap on the wrist and went, "No, don't do that again."
Yeah, but I think it might be a thing where something happened that broke the camel's back, you know, and it was like, that's that.
I think it was a long list of things.
It's like several different things they got him on, and it was like, they were trying to help him as well. They were putting him in matches with Daniel Bryan to try and get him over as a heel, and they still couldn't really do that, and he was still not quite there. And I think there was an element of that where it was, I think if he was being more successful at what he was doing.
Yes, if he was selling that character better.
Then I think they'd have given him the benefit of doubt, but I think he got fired for something, and I'm sure we'll find out at some point, because I'm sure Cass will end up on a podcast or something with Colt Cabana and talk about why he got fired.
Yeah, that Art of Wrestling is back, by the way. Definitely listen to that, because he talks about his trial.
We're going to go on now, because as I said, I don't want to go too much in on
these matches. We could do a whole podcast about Big Cass, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly. Bobby Lashley, Sami Zayn. No one gives a shit. Bobby Lashley won. Apparently Sami Zayn's injured, so great.
Oh yeah, Zayn's out until 2019 now.
Apparently.
Yeah. Charlotte's also out until SummerSlam now. It's all happening again. We're going through this trend of injuries again. Yeah.
Roman Reigns defeated Jinder Mahal. Who gives a shit?
Very predictable.
And then you've got... I think that's mainly it for the kind of fairly uneventful match. Well, Seth Rollins versus Elias. I mean, kind of knew Seth was going to win that, but he cheated to win, which I thought was odd for a guy who's supposed to be the workhorse.
Oh, yeah. And
he rolled him up, pulling on his tights or whatever. It was like...
And then on the following Raw...
He lost it to Dolph.
And it just meant nothing then.
It was like, okay, right. So they're not going to dwell on the fact that he cheated to beat Elias. And that feud is over because Elias is now doing whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
And it's like, so they're ending the feud with with Elias looking great because it means the only way Seth was able to beat Elias was by pulling on his ties.
Well, this is what's confusing
about
it. And
then Seth went on to lose the title, so I don't get it.
They're seemingly ending a feud on a roll-up. Like, that's how feuds start.
Yeah.
That's not how they end. You don't end on a roll-up and go, well, I must admit defeat. So, yeah. No, that's how you trigger a bit of heat.
It's an odd one. That's, as I said, a bit of a pointless match in a way to talk about because, as I said, hours later, he lost the title to Dolph. So,
real quick, though, as well, about the Jinder Mahal Roman Reigns match.
Yeah.
Give me a scenario in which Jinder Mahal legitimately wins that match. I could have bet on this. This could have been the easiest pound I could have made.
Yeah. I knew that Jinder was going to lose.
Yeah.
Everyone knew that Jinder was going to lose. The other thing is, everyone was ready to shit on that match. And I don't know whether that was necessarily a good thing or not. I think when the match was going on, I think Chicago was being Chicago. And yeah, fair enough. No one wants this match. You've got to let them know out of the back that we don't want this kind of crap.
Yeah.
So you tell them. You chant CM Punk. You chant, you know, this is boring. You know, you start doing a Mexican wave. A very good Mexican wave, by the way.
It was
very in unison. I thought it was very good.
Us English are very proud of our Mexican waves, but that was credit to Chicago. That was good.
But I thought it was fine, but to be chanting, like, this is awful before the bells even rung, I think it was like, I mean,
it borders on unfair.
You kind of at that point, I was like, okay.
Give it a chance.
Give it 2 minutes and then start your chance.
Let them at least lock up.
Exactly.
And you can be like, oh, this is rubbish.
But
yeah. It's Chicago.
Because you never
Chicago.
Know, that match could have lasted 30 seconds. They could have done a thing where
Superman
it was
punch,
like,
pin, done.
Like, yeah. It could have run, Superman punch, spear, pin, done. It could have been that. And you wouldn't have given it a chance.
That's a good way to get Roman Reigns a lot of heat, though. If you start him on the Brock Lesnar theory to matches, which is just do 3 moves repeatedly.
Eat, sleep, spear, repeat.
Just have him do that. But yeah, no, I just wanted to mention that obviously it's just one of those things that it just feels like they're not thinking about it. In a more general sense to these earlier matches that meant nothing. Like Zayn, Lashley, and Rollins, Elias.
Sammy made fun of Bobby Lashley's sisters. I mean,
oh no,
and he implied that he wasn't in the, wasn't really in the army. It's like, okay,
what do you do? Pick on his lisp. Yeah. Just like, oh, you talk funny.
Pick on the fact that he smiles constantly, even when he's having someone make fun of him.
Oh,
to
Lashley,
his face.
Just like this. Well, grinning. I say like this. We haven't got video. But
he's grinning.
He just has that big, very pearly white teeth and just sort of like... Hey.
And his weird eyebrows. Anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about some matches that actually matter.
Yes.
I think the first we'll talk about is Carmella versus Asuka, which had a kind of... I like Carmella, right? I know some people are like, oh, I don't like Carmella. No, I think her character's great. I think it's just a genuinely good heel.
Good heel, isn't it? It's a legit heel.
It's the screaming.
People hate her for the things she does.
Yeah, and it's like the screaming in matches. It's the really, like, I say the only way I could describe it is Seth Rollins-esque laugh.
It's like a. Thing. It's not even a cackle.
It's like a kind of, I don't know. Yeah, it's like a growl.
It is like a growl. Yeah, that is perfect. It's like a mating call.
It's the heel Rollins kind of thing. Yeah, like she does that kind of thing where she just goes and does that.
Yeah.
And I think she's great. Although I knew that she wasn't legitimately going to beat Asuka in a clean match, right? And no one guessed that. No one thought that. And obviously there was rumors about Ellsworth.
That I'd seen it umpteens amount of times.
And then the way they did it,
every article,
like,
leading up to it was like, Ellsworth has been spotted so and so.
Yeah,
like,
I just saw one story where it was like one video on YouTube or something where it was, oh, Ellsworth is apparently signed a contract again. I thought, isn't he an intergender champion or something on the on the indies? Like, yeah, he's wrestling women in the indies. And I don't know, like, I know that his whole thing when he was in WWE was that he was doing stuff where he was involved in the women's division, and he got involved in Money in the Bank and all that kind of stuff, and the women would do moves to him.
Now
but he never did moves to the women. And like, there's a thing where it's like, I think there's a question here. Is it sexist, right, to hit a woman in the context of wrestling?
When
in the context of
work.
Professional wrestling, where it's a work and they're both professional athletes trained to do this stuff, is it sexist to hit a woman in that way? Or is it sexist to not hit a woman?
Do you know what? That's exactly what I was going to say.
Because I
thought that's where you were going with that. Yeah. I was like, yeah, because...
Not in the context of the normal thing, right? In real life... Absolutely shouldn't be hitting anyone, right?
No one should hit anyone. Alone... It's weird when people say, don't hit women. Don't hit anyone.
Don't hit anyone,
right?
Stop
hitting people.
It's like,
in general.
But I think in the context of wrestling, there's been... Because it's all a work and it's all contrived anyway.
It's a performance.
It's a performance art. Mm. And, you know, you watch EastEnders and I don't legitimately think, you know, I don't know, let's say Phil Mitchell punches his wife. I'm not going to say, oh, the actor who plays Phil Mitchell punched a woman. What an asshole!
How dare he
I would
television?
Say... Oh, Phil Mitchell is a woman beater, right? I'd say that because the character is what's doing that and you can suspend disbelief.
Hmm.
So I don't know whether... So with Ellsworth involved in this stuff, if he then, I don't know, hit Becky Lynch to the ground, is that acceptable? Because
I know it wouldn't be... It sounds like we would look at it and go, we obviously know it's a work and it's just, it's not a real punch. It's there is contact, obviously,
yeah.
But... I think the imagery for WWE to have the WWE logo in the bottom right-hand corner of a man punching a woman in the face. I just don't... It doesn't look great, regardless.
It's not a great look, is it?
No, it's one of those... I think if they've got a look at the modern age now where it is GIFs,
yeah.
So very like things that have taken very much out of context.
They just take 1 second of footage and...
And parents see a WWE logo and then they see a man punch a woman...
In the face.
In the face.
But that didn't...
On their kid's favourite TV show.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's when it goes...
Then let's talk about weird. What actually happened, though. I mean, Asuka was in this match.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was quite clear from the beginning. I think we all thought, well, come on, it's not going to... Carmella's going to win this.
It's not going to be... And things, it's not going to be a Carmella clean
I still
count.
Think they've misused Iconics and all this. I don't see why they needed to bring back Ellsworth, because I think the Iconics should have been the ones helping her beat Charlotte.
Yeah,
the Iconics should have been there to help her beat Asuka. And they're very good because they're smarmy heels and she's a smarmy heel.
Mm.
And I think they work well together. And they did briefly do a little thing where she was teaming with them in a 6-man tag or something. It was like...
They hinted at it for a little while and then...
I don't understand why they didn't do that. It just seems a bit odd. And like, it's not to say that Iconics haven't been on TV or anything. They have been. They've done stuff. It's just a bit like they're just doing their own thing, and I just don't really see what the end point is with that.
You're right. There's a golden opportunity here to bring in the Iconics to a storyline that is at the forefront of the women's division.
Yeah.
Instead of it being like a background story that's happening for them, which is good that they, like you say, it's good that they're getting TV time.
And they can be the kind of like backup protecting Carmella at all costs while she's the champion.
There you go.
You know, and they're all iconic, you know?
It writes itself. Maybe they're doing it. It's a typical thing of it's WWE, though, going...
It's so obvious they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And I just think sometimes you need to do the obvious thing because...
Do the thing that people have been wanting.
Yeah, do the thing.
Because maybe that's why they'll keep watching.
Do the thing that makes sense.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good to subvert the kind of what you're projecting you're going to do. Right?
Yeah.
Predicting you're going to do. But sometimes you just need to do what is the most simplest idea. The kiss thing. Keep it simple, stupid. Just do what you need to do.
Well, look, it's literally... I know I'm bringing up New Japan again, but this whole... Kenny Omega reuniting with Kota Ibushi, it's something those fans have wanted for fucking ages, and they've been hinting at it for ages. They've been bringing it back, then they just did it because they were like, well, we've been hinting at it for about 2 months straight. They've been talking about it nonstop, and then they hug in the ring and it's like, oh, they are back together. Oh, cool, that's what I wanted.
Yeah,
I'm now gonna watch them have some fucking great tag team matches
and they're back together kind of thing. Yeah.
And it's the WWE mentality that we've bitched about for ages, which is not yet.
Yeah.
It's like, just do it.
Just do it.
Just do it. Just get it.
I mean,
sometimes
you kind of look at it and think, it was like when Seth and Dean got back together as a tag team.
Mm.
And like they made it last a few weeks where it was like, come on, you can do it. Just put your hand in, you know.
Just do the fist thing.
Do the fist thing. Do the shield.
That's what we want to see.
We want shield. Just bring back shield. Do that. Just do the shield.
Give me a t-shirt.
And then eventually they did. And when Dean finally did put his hand in and joined the fist bump, the, you know, yeah, shield thing, the crowd popped and went crazy. And it's like, they could have done a thing where, like, oh, you know, Dean just beats the crap out of Seth.
Yeah, and
they
swerves.
And he's like, oh, swerve, heel turn for Dean. Ugh. And people would have been like, oh, okay, but I was quite looking forward to a Shield reunion. And it had just been like, yeah, the obvious thing would have been do the Shield reunion, but they did something different. And it's like, not always doing something different works. And that was in a case where doing what you needed to do and doing the obvious thing
doing
was
the obvious
best
thing
obvious thing.
Would have been what everyone wanted and what everyone wanted to see. Oh, it's such a missed opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah. So
I don't know, these, and it sounds silly that we're saying it about the Iconics, and obviously it's not like they're not involved very heavily with anything at the moment, but they could have been.
But they could have been. And then the new call-ups from NXT, and I just think that sometimes they forget about these people. They bring them up because they've got buzz, but then when they get to the main roster, it's like,
what a platform to put them on.
No one knows what to do with them. And it's almost
they end up floundering.
It's almost as if the writers on the main roster don't watch NXT.
Well, they
probably don't.
They see a new wrestler and go, where have they come from? It's NXT. So, okay, I'll watch a couple of their matches. And then they go, right, let's come up with something completely different or nothing.
Yeah, so it's like there's no reference. And the only time they've ever done anything that was a reference was Asuka.
Yeah.
Because she had the undefeated streak. But I wouldn't have been surprised if they just originally wanted her to lose her first match.
Just like, have her can it off and be like,
can
oh,
it off and start again.
It's like, oh no, she's lost already. And it'd be like, well, you've killed that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if someone suggested that.
That would have been, I'm sure that was, that was probably passed across the table at some point.
Let's move on from Carmella Asuka, which I thought was an okay match, but
it was an okay match. There was, but
it needed to end how it did, but I think they should have used the Iconics.
Yeah, there was a lot to talk about there because so much potential.
AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura, last man standing for the WWE Championship. What do you think about it?
I really enjoyed it. I liked it. I like that.
I think it was the best match those two have had.
Yes. And I think, and that's it. I agree with you, and that's including the one they had in New Japan. That, like,
oh, sorry,
clash.
I was talking about WWE.
Oh,
matches.
I'm talking about
sorry,
in general.
Sorry,
I think
I should be more clear about that. Yeah, because I actually haven't watched any of their Japan stuff.
They had that,
really,
they had that one really great match in New Japan, but it was like, that was a good match. But watching that one, especially where they're at the point they are now in their careers, and you go,
yeah,
they've
context.
Elevated. Yeah, they've, again, how story can be important to make me care. Something that WWE is starting to sort of understand with certain storylines that are going on.
I think we might be reaching a name for this episode of the podcast. Like, context is key.
Context is key. Hashtag context is key. But I really believed that build up. And it's something as simple as just Nakamura doing low blows.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I'm believing it.
Yeah.
Because he's like, it's a weird way to do a heel turn.
I thought it was good that in this match, when Nakamura went to do the low blow and AJ jumped out of the way, and then it was just like he was had a look at his face off if to say, oh, that didn't work out, and then ended up with the thing where AJ does that Styles clash off the steps onto the ground, and it was just like, every time I see the Styles clash, because I've seen it gone wrong before, I saw James Ellsworth nearly die, I was like, you know, I whenever I see that move, especially on the outside of the ring, I think, oh god, Don't fuck it up.
Yeah, you watch.
Don't clip Shinsuke's head on the stairs as you go down. Shit, like,
if you ever want to see a Styles clash go wrong, you watch that clip of Yoshitatsu break his neck.
Yeah,
that is nasty.
It's just these things where I'm just like, oh god. But it's the natural thing to tuck when you're supposed.
You
to.
You tuck in, but you should tuck out. You
tuck out when it's
or hold out
when it's the Styles clash. But anyway, so he did that, and then he did the kick to the bollocks, which I thought was a very good kick to the bollocks.
A solid kick to the bollocks.
It was like, yeah.
Can this be the name of the book?
Solid kick
solid
to the bollocks.
Kick to the bollocks. Episode 22. But it was.
Never mind the kick in the bollocks.
Never mind the bollocks.
Never mind the bollocks.
But it was like it was. You talk about obviously the Styles clash off the steps, always risky. Any sort of Styles clash off the steps to the ground is always difficult. But the reason I like that match so much is because those moments can exist, because those two know each other so well. You know they're going to have a good match. They both know each other so well.
Yeah.
So you know that match is going to flow. So they can get away with doing some risky stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you know it's going to work. There's no, if he doesn't tuck it, or if he doesn't hold it properly, he's going to get it wrong. Those two know each other very well.
Yeah.
So the more matches those two have, the better. And I think at a big stage like this, where they're the main event, 100% they need to do more of those.
I'm glad, though, that to us. I'm glad that it seems like the story's over.
It does, doesn't it?
At least for now.
That could have been like a natural pause.
At least for now, it's done with. Mm. And I'm glad about that because, you know, going forward, it seems like... Well, I mean, the Money in the Bank was on Raw. It went to a Raw superstar, so they haven't got that. And there's going to be... we're going to go into Extreme Rules later because I've got a thing on my, you know.
Oh, as of talking right now.
Oh, they did the Gauntlet match. Sorry, I'm getting confused.
Yeah, the Gauntlet match,
and Rusev won that. So it seems like they're moving away from, unless they're going to have Shinsuke screw it for Rusev.
And somehow involve the three of them.
Yeah, or something like that. Going into SummerSlam, maybe it'll be Shinsuke versus AJ versus Rusev in a triple threat or something like that.
I'd be happy with that.
Well, it'd be fine.
It's good to see Rusev obviously getting what he deserves.
Yeah.
An actual shot and being in the main event picture.
Yeah.
It's what he's needed to be doing for the last like 6 months.
Especially considering the fact that he had that like long feud with John Cena and stuff like that, and that never progressed to him getting into the world title picture when it should have.
Exactly.
Okay, well, we'll move on for that though, but I think it was a good match. There's so many matches on this card, we're not going to be able to fully talk about every single one of them to the extent, because otherwise we'd be doing another 2-hour podcast. So, what else we got? So we got Ronda Rousey versus Nia Jax. Before we talk about that match, we will talk about the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match.
Oh, yeah, good chat.
Because
we'll
talk about the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match because it was won by Alexa Bliss. And I thought it was redemption for last year's debacle of Money in the Bank ladder match, right?
Yeah, and
last year was completely screwed up because they thought, oh, wouldn't it be funny if James Ellsworth grabs it and then drops it down to cut? No, it would not be funny.
No.
And no one thought it was funny, so you had to redo it 2 days later. So, yeah.
Oh, God, that was so embarrassing. The fact that they had to redo it and then it was like...
Now, there's this constant conflict from the start that the people go, oh, this is the second ever Money in the Bank. No, it's not. It's the third one because they fucked up the first one.
Yeah, this is the third one because they've done a second one on SmackDown.
But I thought this one was a very good one, even just as a match. Because, like, last year's one was the first ever Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. And both of the two matches, they both weren't great, but they were doing as best as they could with who they had in the match. Because it was a thin roster. It was only SmackDown. It was kind of a bit... And whereas this time, they were able to kind of take the best of the best.
This is what they wished their first one was.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they have, Alexa Bliss, Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, Ember Moon, Lana. I mean, Lana did actually all right.
Yeah.
Naomi, Natalia, and Sasha Banks. You know, you have some of the top people in that. And when you have Alexa and Charlotte in that match... Oh, I can't wait for those two to have a match.
Oh, you know,
because they have not been on the same roster yet. Like, one has been on SmackDown, the other's on Raw, and it's always they swap between
They always completely swap. And like I said earlier...
And they have these moments where the two of them face off in the ring at, like, a Royal Rumble or something like that, and you're like, oh, yeah, they've not been in the ring together.
Well, this is the problem as well, is obviously they're now finally on the same roster. But I said it earlier, Charlotte's now out until SummerSlam.
Mm.
So now it's a case of... Fuck's sake, we were so close.
Well, no, because Alexa is on Raw.
Oh, yeah, what am I thinking of?
Yeah, they're still not on the same roster.
They're not, are they?
But they were both in the Money in the Bank ladder match.
Oh, it's a nightmare. Oh. Yeah. They need to be on the same roster at some point.
I think what might happen at some point is the one ends up on the other roster and then Charlotte's going to go up against Ronda at WrestleMania, isn't she?
Oh, yeah.
That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, they'll keep her safe
but
until WrestleMania.
Charlotte's on SmackDown. Ronda's on Raw. So what's going to probably end up happening at some point...
Charlotte will go to Raw. They won't put Ronda on SmackDown.
Charlotte will go to Raw. Or they'll just do a thing where it's like at the Royal Rumble. It'd be like Goldberg and Lesnar at WrestleMania 20.
Mm.
Like, they weren't on the same brand, but they still had a feud. They started it at the Royal Rumble. One screwed the other from something. And then you end up with... Through pay-per-view midway between the two.
Yeah.
They kind of set up the thing for the match at WrestleMania. Because I don't think those two need to do it for a title. They could just have a solid match and people would just be like, yeah, cool.
We talked about it earlier. Velveteen Dream and Ricochet didn't need a title to have a fucking great match.
No.
And yeah, Charlotte and Alexa Bliss don't need a title to make that match great.
No, they could have a great match, just the two of them. I think it'd be better if they did have a title on the line because those two are basically the top two women in their divisions.
Yeah.
On their Raw and SmackDown.
Easily.
Whenever they're on their show, they are the number one person. Like, Nia Jax was... I was about to say NXT Women's Champion. Nia Jax was Raw Women's Champion.
Yeah.
but I never felt like she was the top person.
She felt like she was getting there.
She was starting to get there.
But she was getting there because she had the title. If she didn't have the title, she wouldn't be in that position.
Yeah. Okay, so actually, well, since I mentioned Nia Jax, we'll move on. Because the Money in the Bank ladder match was a good match. And
it was good.
Alexa won it, and I thought that was cool. I mean, I was kind of fine with any of them winning it, but my pick was Natalia, because I thought it makes sense when Natalia's a screw Ronda, her friend.
True.
And go back to Natty being a heel, which is where she is much better. She's an irritating baby face. And yeah. The whole thing when she was on SmackDown was that she was an irritating heel who was trying to be like a suck up. She was like a kiss ass, but she was a heel. People hated her for that. And I thought it was worked well. Now she's on Raw. She's just a genuine, she's supposed to be a genuinely nice person, but we're like, no, you're annoying. Stop it.
And we know that you can be a great heel, so it's like, it's not believable anymore.
So Alexa won. I thought it was great.
Yep.
Fast forward to later in the show, Nia Jax versus Ronda Rousey have, I think, one of the best matches Nia has done.
Easily. We're
going back to what you said about matches. You're only as good as your opponent. And yeah. I think that's where it comes down to it. Because Ronda has taken to wrestling very well.
Like a duck to water.
Yeah, like
it?
A duck to water. She's just gone straight into it head first and it's been great. And I think she showed what she could do in that match. Because put her in a match against Stephanie and anyone can bloody win.
Yeah.
Right? Fair enough. And if you have Triple H, Kurt Angle in that match, and then Stephanie is the one that you're fighting, yeah, you're going to look good. And not to say she didn't. She definitely did look good at WrestleMania. Yeah. But she wasn't really tested because it's Stephanie.
Well, it wasn't a challenge. It was more just a let's sort of hint that she's going to get battered.
Yes.
Stephanie McMahon's going to be absolutely destroyed.
I think it was nice. I've liked when Ronda has been involved and doing storylines just on Raw. And I think that's good. And her stuff with Nia was badly set up.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was stupid the way they did it, where they had her on a red carpet and it's like, hey, you know, we should have a match sometime. Oh, well, I'm a champion and I need a challenger. Why don't you have a match against me? Oh, yeah, cool. Well, why not? It's like, I don't care. Stop doing that.
They could have done their build-up promos on E.
They could have done, exactly. It could have been on Total Divas. I mean, what the hell is this? You know. So I just thought it was badly set up, but the match itself was better than I thought it was. The judo flip thing that Ronda did on Nia was incredible.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, wow.
Well, it's in moments like that you go, yeah, she was a professional. She is a professional at this.
And you add on to that, Ronda getting on the top rope, which is something she's never done.
No, you don't do that in the UFC.
She went on the top rope and did a textbook crossbody. And I thought she did very well.
The thing is that, I'm using this phrase a lot, but it is, you're as good as your opponent. Credit can go to Nia Jax as well for holding her own in that match.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like at any point either of them carried each other.
Yeah.
There wasn't like Nia fucked that up. Or, Ronda missed her point there. Oh, shit.
Mm.
It did feel like they both were working really well together.
Yeah. But I thought they were just sort of performing at the best they could at that point. And
so
I thought it was good.
I definitely 100% agree with you. That is probably the best match either of them have had. In the WWE.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's quite easy to say it's Ronda's best match because it's her second match. But Nia's had quite a few over the years with various different people. And I think actually Nia's best performance was in that match just because you add in the kind of level at which they're performing at. You know, it's Ronda Rousey, for Christ's sake.
There you go.
And then, because regardless of her wrestling experience, she's still an athletic legend, like a fighting legend.
It's also, and it's a
not like she's a sprinter or something. She was a UFC fighter, so we know she can legitimately beat the shit out of people.
Mm.
And then Nia is the women's champion, so it was like, good. She was at the top of her game, and I thought it was great.
Yeah.
But, Alexa had to ruin it.
Oh,
the bully.
Alexa.
What a bully. or as Ryback used to say, bully.
You bully. You're a bully.
A bully. Yes, Alexa cashed in on Nia Jax. And I thought it was well done because it seemed like Ronda was going to get the win. And then Alexa runs in, beats the crap out of both of them with the briefcase. And then pinned or does her finishing DDT thing or whatever it was. Or did she do the Twisted Bliss off the top rope? I think she did Twisted Bliss. I think she did the sort of DDT thing and then did Twisted Bliss.
Then did Twisted Bliss. Because it was like a really, it's a believable way to cash in as well.
And she
like,
pinned her, yeah, and got the win. And I thought it was very good. And it was like the thing where you go, take out Ronda. She knew she had to take out Ronda. And Nia was already kind of beaten up by Ronda.
Mm.
But she needed to take out Ronda. And I thought the way she did it was great. Like, just eliminate her from the outside and all the rest of it. So I thought it was good cash in. The women's, I think it was good that they did a short... I say short run, like the shortest of you could possibly do of runs of the Money in the Bank thing. But
yes,
you know, like when Dean cashed in on the same night he won it, I thought that was really good, because that night you had all three members of the Shield at some point in that night were world champion. Well, so Seth lost the title to Roman, and then Roman got cashed in on by Dean. So all three of them at some point
had the title
that night. I had the title. I was like, yeah, that's cool.
It's also a good sign, like I. Especially when Dean won it, and then after that, the sort of the aftermath of that.
Yeah.
He had a really good story after that and was very involved.
And he had a good run.
It definitely seems like to me, when they immediately cash in, the writers are sitting there chomping at the bit going, we've got great stuff lined up for this. So we need to get rid of that briefcase, give her that title. We've got stuff that she needs to do.
I think also Carmella is kind of still wrapped up in the briefcase stuff because she only cashed in a little while ago. And she had the Money in Bank briefcase for so long.
Yeah, that was her story, that she had the briefcase.
Yeah, and she's now the champion because of the briefcase. Mm. So to have Alexa walking around calling herself Miss Money in the Bank.
You're doing the same thing. Yeah,
you're doing the same thing. It's too easy. But it's also, when people think Miss Money in the Bank, they're thinking Carmella.
That's it.
You know, I think it was her Twitter handle was Miss Money in the Bank.
not her handle, but she had changed her name. Yeah.
Her name on there was just Miss Money in the Bank or whatever.
Because that was her story for, like you say, for a good part of a year.
Yeah.
And then having Alexa go straight, like basically come straight away from that event with the championship. Yeah. They've clearly got something for her. So that's a good sign.
So it was interesting to see. And I think Alexa winning, that was the right way. I'm always nervous with Money in the Bank briefcases. Please don't screw up. Don't screw up. Because I was thinking, I was just going to be like when John Cena screwed Baron Corbin last year.
He
was just, you didn't take out the other person. So there's this other goody-goody who's like, oh no, I had a good match and you ruined my match, so I'm going to ruin your cash-in.
Mm.
And it's like, you go, no, just let them do it, and then you beat the shit out of them.
Yeah, just have a match. Like, the people that are involved in that match are the only people involved.
Yeah, it's always annoying. So it's like, Alexa has to take out Ronda, because Ronda would have been too much of a goody-goody to be like, no, we were having a fair and competitive match and you ruined it, Alexa. She'd have done something like that. So I was just like, no. So I'm glad that the way it went, I'm glad she cashed in. I'm glad she's champion. And
it should hopefully only benefit her from now on. So this should be a good run she's got built up for herself here with this championship.
And then the last match we'll talk about is the men's Money in the Bank ladder match, where it was a big day, big night for Team Little Big.
Oh yeah,
because Alexa won the women's
and Braun won
the men's. Or should we say the Monster in the Bank?
Oh.
I thought it was a very good Money in the Bank ladder match.
It was. Like, it was really good. It's typical for Money in the Bank to have these great spots,
and it had a great set of people.
It was Braun,
Bobby Roode, Finn Balor, Kevin Owens, Kofi Kingston, Rusev, Samoa Joe, and The Miz.
Kofi Kingston has to be in it.
Kofi Kingston, yeah.
He has to.
I thought it was good. I thought it was good that they waited until the night to reveal that he was the guy from The New Day to be in it.
Well, Kofi Kingston is the guy. He's becoming the Shelton Benjamin of Money in the Bank matches.
Yeah. I like the fact that they refer to him, like even the other members of The New Day will refer to him as a veteran.
Yeah,
they'll talk about him like he's the old man of the group.
He's had championship gold. He's been around for ages.
He's been there for about 13 years.
Big E's only been there for about six.
What was it when Kofi Kingston joined in, what, 2005, 2006, something like that?
Is that when he was...
when he was Kofi Kingston from Jamaica.
From Jamaica, come on. Are you actually from Jamaica, though? No.
No, I'm from Ghana.
West Africa. but yeah, that was like, that was forever ago.
Yeah.
13 years, I think. Yeah, right.
I mean, he's been there at least a decade and some.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I think Braun Strowman, the tactic being take him out.
Yeah.
And I thought it was cool. And then they buried him under the ladders, which I thought was cool. But anyone knows Braun Strowman and his history of being under things, you wouldn't do that because you know it won't work, because he's been under chairs before and he's just sort of
also
climbed out of it.
A man who, within the realms of kayfabe, the safety net of kayfabe,
yeah,
has lifted an ambulance like six ladders is not going to be that bad for him.
He lifted up the production truck, didn't he?
Yeah,
point.
That was it. That was the other one.
Yeah.
So he's tipped an ambulance. He's lifted a production truck. Yeah, no, you can't bury him in ladders. He's going
to
get out.
But yeah, it was great. But I thought the way he got out was quite cool, because like Finn going to get one of the ladders.
Oh,
he,
yeah.
He moves it and it was like, oh, that was the one ladder that was keeping Braun down. So he gets up and grabs the other end of the ladder and then just like, oh, God.
I saw a really funny meme about that where it was basically, it's like, it's Finn lifting up the ladder, but it's basically Finn lifting up the, you know, when you've got like a plate of nachos, lifting up the one covered in all the cheese.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, no, you can't touch the master ladder.
But yeah, so, I mean, Braun had the moment with Kevin Owens when Kevin Owens was thrown from the top of that ridiculously tall ladder. I thought it was really cool.
Always a tall ladder. Always a ridiculously tall
I thought
ladder.
It was very cool. And I loved that moment, because you just go, well, that's Kevin Dunn. That is Kevin finished. That's not Kevin Dunn.
Kevin Dunn.
He's got much smaller teeth than that.
smaller than the ladder? Are you sure?
But yeah, I thought Kevin was great in that. I thought that him in the run-up to Money in the Bank has been very good, because his whole thing about trying to kind of get on side with the other members of the Money in the Bank match to try and get them to team up against Braun, I thought that was really cool. It's very classic Owens.
Kevin Owens really plays his part well. He played his part throughout, like you said, in the build up and in the match. Plays his part as this manipulative heel.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's almost like the, well, it's like, he's just doing like, he's been talking about the Money in the Bank and how he's involved. And then on Twitter also then just does things about where he bothers Shania Twain enough.
Yeah.
Well, so he's like, he's over, but also still manages to keep that heel aspect. Mm. And it's like him being with Chris Jericho for so long has helped.
I think the only issue I had with Kevin Owens this weekend of, you know, that weekend of wrestling was the fact that he ended up on, he came out on Raw the next night. And I was like,
oh yeah,
he should have been gone for like a week or so. He got thrown from a 15-foot ladder.
How are you not in the hospital?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He gets thrown from what, 15-20-foot ladder, like he should just be not around for like a week at least. He shouldn't be on Raw the next night.
24 hours later he's there.
They should be doing a medical update on Kevin Owens and saying, well, we did a medical, you know, we've spoken to the doctors after last night's match and Kevin Owens was in hospital all night and he's got a fractured rib and he's got, you know, come up with crap like that. And then the next week he'd come along to Raw in a wheelchair and sling and kind of really ham it up. And then they could do for weeks, have him in the thing until you realize he's been faking it for several weeks.
Yeah.
And he just jumps out of the wheelchair and beats the crap out of someone. It's just simple booking, but it could be done.
Because you can have him on TV, but have him also be inactive from the ring. So you're selling the injury, you're selling the spot that happened at your pay-per-view. But you're not just having, and literally he walks out.
Yeah.
Just like, no assistance.
No, it's just like, oh yeah, he's just sort of grabbing his waist a bit. And ooh, I'm a bit sore. And then wrestles a match.
Well, that's the thing, like,
in a main event.
Selling it the same way that someone with a slight stomachache would sell it. Like, ooh.
Yeah, ooh, God, I'm a bit uncomfortable. Feeling great.
It's like,
a bit
how peaky. Are you just a bit uncomfortable if you fall off a 50-foot ladder?
I don't know. But I think Braun deserved it, because Braun has been very good and he's been getting really over with the crowds and stuff. I mean, I think there are other people I'd rather see, but at the same time, because I really wanted to see The Miz with Money in the Bank, but I can see why Braun got it, and I think Braun does deserve it. And I just hope that, I think what's going to happen is he'll probably just cash in on Brock.
Yeah, he'll have
But to. He'll announce he's going to cash in on Brock. Like, he'll announce.
He's not going to be the type Brock's of wrestler not, to run out and sneak up on them.
Brock's not around enough for him to be able to do a series of sneak, is he not going to cash in? It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
He'll do a John Cena where he'll be like, I'm booking a match for so-and-so pay-per-view, probably Mania.
Maybe SummerSlam.
Maybe SummerSlam.
I hope SummerSlam.
That'd be good if it was SummerSlam. I was trying to think of an event that wasn't so soon.
Well, okay, so we'll move on, because we have done quite a long podcast so far. Because I think Braun win, and there's not really much there, but I thought it was some very good spots. I think Bobby Roode was a bit under. He didn't really do much. I thought Finn did some really good stuff. Kevin was on fire and you know, rest in peace. and then, you know, it was kind of, I thought Braun did very well. Going forward, Brock Lesnar is not going to be at Extreme Rules. Brock Lesnar is not going to be at any show until probably like SummerSlam, right, in the run-up to SummerSlam.
True.
He's also not going to be at that Melbourne live show on the network in Australia. He's not going to be on that. They said in Vince's little video for it, he said it'll be practically the whole roster. And you see the poster, Brock is nowhere to be seen on that part. Yeah, I thought it was very good use of the word practically.
Good
there,
choice
Vince.
Of words.
Practically everyone. I mean, there's Triple H, there's The Undertaker, there's everyone. There's a guy who is over 50 and should not be wrestling anymore. And he's, you know, he's there. Is Brock there? Brock, we've got Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey's going to be there.
Oh, you talking about, yeah, you're talking about former UFC fighters Ronda Rousey. She's going to be there. Shayna Baszler might even be there.
Yeah, so Brock is probably going to be at SummerSlam. Well, I hope he's at SummerSlam. He's going to be at SummerSlam. Mm. And I
That's
want
what
to see
do.
Braun.
Braun will
I
be mean, like, I'm going to have a match with you at
but
so-and-so.
At Extreme Rules next month, there is going to be a multi-man match to determine the number one contender for the Universal Championship.
Who's already been
Currently,
announced for that?
Roman Reigns and Bobby Lashley are in there.
Of course.
We assume that Finn will probably be in there. Kevin Owens might be in there.
Yep.
I mean, what might happen is someone wins this match and they are announced as going to have a match at SummerSlam against Brock. And then Braun says, hey, I've got money in the bank. I'll tell you what, I'm cashing in and I'm going to have my match at SummerSlam against Brock.
Mm.
And they say, oh, okay, well, triple threat. And it'll be like, okay. And then Roman will be in that match. And then, lol, Roman will win.
How healthy is Dean Ambrose right now? And also, what brand is Dean Ambrose on? I've forgotten.
Dean's on Raw.
He is on Raw?
Yeah, because he was Raw Tag Team Champion with Seth.
Ah, yeah. So
before he got injured.
If but Dean's healthy, he might be in that.
I don't know about Dean's. I think Dean will probably return after SummerSlam if he's going to return. Yeah, because I just think that they need to have a moment to be able to go, boom, Dean's back. And the night after SummerSlam, it's a little bit like the night after WrestleMania.
Yeah, true. Actually, they can save it for that Monday, can't they? And then it's a big moment for that Monday Raw. So it gives people a reason to tune in.
So who do you think would be the number one contender coming out of that match? And putting Braun aside from all this, who on Raw do you think should be number one contender for the Universal Championship?
I'm always gonna favor Finn, just because just give him that fucking title. Just give it to him.
I think
please.
He should. But do you think he will?
Well, I'm always biased towards it because I don't like the idea that that is his record, is that he was the first Universal Champion and held it for about a day.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's favoritism. But I think, realistically, I think the person to come out of it as number one contender out of that match is either going to be Reigns or... Do you know what? It probably is Reigns or Lashley.
Yeah, it probably is.
I reckon Lashley, actually.
I think Reigns, just because I think there's been a lot of people talking about, like, oh, is Brock going to go up against Reigns at SummerSlam?
And this gives him a sort of...
And then people are like, oh, but is Braun going to go up against Brock? And then people are like, oh, who's Vince's golden boy now? Is Roman Reigns not
Braun?
His golden boy
is
anymore?
Roman?
Is it Braun now? You know, and all this kind of stuff. So I think what might end up happening is Roman will win and have his match against Brock. And it either be one-on-one against Brock and then Braun cashes in after and does the run-in cash-in.
Yeah.
Or it's a triple threat with Braun in there and he cashes in as his to make it a triple threat.
If I'm sticking with Bobby Lashley, it'll probably be the exact same story, actually. It'll probably be
and
a triple
threat.
And
you end up with WrestleMania 31 again. End up with Braun entering the match either... In preparation, way beforehand, announces it's going to be a triple threat, and he pins Reigns, or he cashes in and makes it a triple threat and
that's
pins Reigns.
That's what I was thinking. Actually, yeah,
he won't
be
pin
mine.
Brock.
I was going to say he'll basically turn up at the one-on-one, cash in, but be like, no, I want both of you.
Yeah,
and he'll be like, no, we'll make it a triple threat. He's like, I don't want just you.
Yeah,
I want both of you.
Because this is the thing. If you cash in and you haven't gotten involved in the match. Like, when Alexa cashed in, she beat the crap out of both of them with the briefcase before she cashed in. So the match was called off. It was a disqualification.
Yeah. Then she cashed in. She started a new match.
So she started...
the bell had already rung.
Yeah, she started a new match. Whereas
If the bell hasn't rung...
When Seth cashed in, Seth ran down to the ring during the match, gave it to the referee and said, I'm cashing in. And he went, oh, okay. And then I think they may have announced it on the microphone. You know, the announcer said this now match is now a triple threat.
Yeah, like he just inserts himself into that match because that match isn't finished.
Yeah, he inserts himself in as opposed to starting a new match. So I think that could happen with Braun, but I think what's more likely is Braun is so much of a kind of big guy and he's, you know, I can defeat anyone. And his record shows he's barely lost any matches. I think he'll probably end up just like cashing in and preparing for it and actually saying, I'm going to cash in a month's time.
Yeah.
But he'll probably wait until after Extreme Rules to announce that.
And then,
he's also made it quite clear he wants to face Brock Lesnar. He doesn't want to face Roman or whatever. Because he could wait. I mean, he could just see what happens, theoretically. In kayfabe, he could just wait and just see what happens, but he's not going to.
Well, the thing is, that'll be the logical thing to do, but kayfabe's never logical.
And also, Brock... when are they just going to get that title off him? I'm just so sick of seeing him with that fucking belt. Well, because... Not because I see him so often, but because I see him so little, when I do see him, he's got a fucking tile around his waist and it looks ridiculous.
Oh, and the thing is, he's never on TV. He's on the pay-per-views for like probably a 10-minute match and you never see him again. It's like,
I just think they missed the boat with putting the tile on Roman.
They could have just given it to Roman.
Why didn't they just give it to Roman?
Cheers. And this goes back to what we were saying earlier of, not yet. Oh, but you had your fucking chance.
But the thing is, they put the title on Roman in the past. So Roman has been world champion before. I just don't understand why they've just been like, oh, yeah, we're going to give him like 3 opportunities, going to lose them all, and then moan about it. Like, it just makes him look like a dick. And I'm like, just give him the fucking belt.
Yeah, give him the belt. Like, they had the golden opportunity there because Lesnar was getting so much heat because fans were reacting the same way we were, where we're just like, why has he still got that belt? It's such an embarrassment.
Yeah.
And then Reigns was the guy that was coming in and going, okay, he's not the guy we wanted, but if he takes that title off him, I'll cheer him.
Yeah.
They had that, like, literally, you could have said that to any of the writers in the room, going, look, we will cheer him if he takes that belt off Lesnar.
Yeah.
Because that is the lesser of two evils. Yeah. They just went, nah.
Nah.
Nah. All right.
Yeah, I think that's all we can really talk about. I mean, obviously, there's 2 other matches at Extreme Rules currently announced. Alexa Bliss versus Nia Jax, surprising. And AJ Styles versus Rusev, which I think is really cool for Rusev. We did briefly talk about it earlier, though, didn't we? I think when we talked about the Gauntlet match and Rusev won that. I think it's very good for Rusev. Yeah. And hopefully it's the start of good things for Rusev because he's been a bit
all over the place.
And Rusev Day is really bloody over.
Well, we said earlier, it's just that it's something that he's deserved. Yes. For far longer than he's actually been waiting for. Yeah, like he could have had this ages ago. But
exactly.
He's finally got there, so that's good.
Yeah. And that's the stuff. That's all our coverage.
Yeah, that's everything. Like, we've covered everything that we've seen. It was... You can look back at Money in the Bank and think, okay, maybe it wasn't the best, but there was a lot going on. There's a lot of build-up.
I think it was a solid weekend of wrestling, and it was a hell of a lot better than Backlash, because any weekend of wrestling can be better than Backlash.
Anything was better than Backlash.
Thank you for listening. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at CSWPod and at Ring Review for Ben's one. That's a bit more Japanese orientated.
Yar.
Give us a subscribe on iTunes and go to cswrestlingpodcast.com to listen to all the podcasts.
You can download the physical MP3s if you really want to.
Yeah, if you really want to, they're on there. But you can also listen on Apple and all the rest of it. Other podcasting apps are available.
Yep.
At CSWPod. And I think we're going to do a show about the NXT UK stuff, because that got briefly announced.
Completely non-spoiler.
We're going to do a non-spoiler thing. Well, because we've only had a couple of things sort of half ruined for us, but we're going to do a short kind of preview type thing of the UK tournament. Spoiler free, so we'll just do that stuff. And because it's going to be next Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah,
so
it's going to be airing on the 25th and 26th, I think.
Yeah, Monday and Tuesday in June. Yeah,
yeah, we're going to talk. That'll hopefully go up Sunday.
We're going to try and get that. We'll get that one up before
Monday, anyway.
Before the show. So yeah, you can listen to it before the show. Okay, cool. All right. Bye then.
Bye.
Bye.